Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. Well, folks, we figured out how to do the single shot with just one microphone. We'll have better technology in a couple of weeks. But Rex, I promised to share the microphone after the second round of the Open Championship. There's a lot to get to, from the weather conditions to the golf course to, of course, the 36-hole leader. That is Scottie Scheffler. Won a day that was ripe for scoring. The best player in the world, number one player in the world, on a tricky golf course, ends up shooting a 7-under 64 to take the halfway lead by a single shot over Matt Fitzpatrick. Your biggest takeaway from Friday here at Port Rush.
To be fair, full disclosure on this one, neither you nor I decided to put Scottie Scheffler's name in any of our punch shot answers when we did them on Wednesday. We didn't pick him to win. We didn't pick him as a contender. We certainly didn't pick him as a dark horse. We didn't pick him as the guy that would be most disappointed. And I was thinking about that, and it really boils down to one thing. One, either you pick him to win, and he was the favorite coming into this week for all the obvious reasons based on what he's able to do with the golf ball, or everything else is kind of embarrassing. You're kind of talking down to him if you pick him as a contender. It just doesn't feel right. It certainly doesn't feel right to pick him as a dark horse. You knew he wasn't going to leave here disappointed. I'll go back to, I think, both of our arguments on Wednesday was, look, he was the clear favorite for all the right reasons. However, this one in my mind, and it still is going to be the most difficult for him to win because all of the things that he loves to rely on, that solid ball striking, that is so repeatable, the part of his game that allows him to turn it up a notch like he did today, coming down the back nine, all of those things, they can kind of fall victim to the one thing this championship brings to bear, which is the variables, the unexpected, the wind, the rain. You and I sat in here all day long, and it was either sunshine and beautiful or coming down sideways and windy. That's difficult for most players to handle. He had no problem with that today.
Yeah, I understand the viewpoint that there would be variables, and that could be challenging for Scottie Scheffler to get over, a guy who really relishes his routine, his preparation, does not like sort of the variables that could be introduced. However, I think when you look at his potential skill set, what he does well, he's an incredible driver of the golf ball, the most accurate driver at the elite level. His iron play is peerless, who also was a great links player. Tom Watson, Tiger Woods, a player who would be able to navigate and plot his way around the golf course. That's Scottie Scheffler to a T. And I think when you look at Royal Portrush and what you have to do particularly well at this golf course, you're seeing a lot of players miss fairways, even the best drivers of the golf ball.
Scottie's losing strokes on the field off the tee.
Yeah, he is, and I think a lot of players are doing so. That's because of the crosswinds, and so when you're getting some of the undulations and the mounting in the fairways, it's hard to keep them in there if you're not playing a particular shot and holding it into that. But what he is doing and what he did exceptionally well on Friday is his iron play. And when you're pairing that now with his putting, which we've been talking about all season, which is much improved, he's first in the field in approach to green, second in the field in putting. Scottie Scheffler, a 36-hole leader, looks like he's going to be a very intimidating presence. It was interesting, though, Rex, at the end of the round, because he was paired with Shane Lowry, and Shane Lowry was assessed a two-shot penalty for making his ball, causing his ball to move in the 12th hole. It was a very weird dynamic to how this ended, where they were in there for, 15, 20 minutes in scoring, trying to figure out exactly what the penalty was. Scottie came and did all the partner interviews, just four questions with him. It just feels like it's a little weird. It's a little unsettled, a little awkward ending to the second round.
Well, and the Lowry situation is interesting because the way the rule is, it's the naked eye rule. That clearly it moved. We saw it on live TV when we were watching it. Anyone who has watched the replay can see, yes, it moved, and it's pretty obvious that he caused it to move. That's the first part of the equation. The second part of the equation when it comes to the rules of golf is, did the player see it with the naked eye? That means if you don't slow it down to microsecond slow-mo, can you see it move? I felt like he could have. He said, and he contended, Shane Lowry, that he did not see it move. And I tend to believe him in that situation because in the heat of the moment, it did not. I think Scottie probably said it best. It's an unfortunate situation. This is one of those rules of golf where clearly there is no intent. I will give Shane Lowry credit also because he was asked by an Irish reporter that you went from being in contention and after the two-stroke penalty, you just kind of barely made the cut. And he was very quick to say, the way Scottie is playing, am I really in contention? Let's be honest. A 2-under par, would I have really been in contention? And so he did give it credit. You're right. It was a bit surreal. Two groups came through. Your arm's getting tired, isn't it?
It is.
That's the drawback of us sharing the mic.
Get some wrist tension.
That's right. I will say two groups came through while they were in there getting that ruling. So that was a bit surreal. But I think Shane did the right thing, and Scottie was pretty outspoken about it.
It was an interesting scenario because he clearly had to have made the ball move. But Shane Lowry said that when he was getting ready for his shot, obviously he's looking down the golf ball. He did not necessarily see it move. And when he went into the scoring trailer afterward to sign his scorecard, and he was approaching the 15th green to tell him that there's a potential infraction, a potential two-shot penalty. So he played the last couple of holes with that possibility in mind. When he got to that scoring trailer, he thought, in his opinion, that the RNA officials had already made up their mind, and they were essentially just waiting for him to confirm it. Shane Lowry could have said, I didn't do it, yeah, and you don't have proof. And he could have
said, I just didn't see it.
I didn't see it, and they wouldn't have been able to prove it, and he would have been able to maintain his score without a two-shot penalty. But Shane Lowry, I think this was very interesting, said, I didn't want social media to bash me. If all of a sudden all they're showing is the slow-mo video of my ball moving, I didn't want to be labeled a cheat. I found that very interesting, very honorable. Now Shane Lowry run to the weekend 10 shots behind.
And I feel like every tour player would do that. I'm sure there's exceptions out there, and you guys come at us on YouTube if you want to on that one. But I feel like every tour player, given that situation, that's why I didn't understand what was taking so long in scoring. If you saw it, even if you didn't see it, you're in a situation where you kind of have to take that penalty. If you look at it on live TV, and you don't even have to have it in slow motion to see it move, it's obvious that it moved. You kind of have to take that one.
Frequent YouTube commenter Strida is going to be very upset that we're going to be spending now the next couple of minutes talking about Rory McIlroy, who is seven shots behind.
Before we do that, real quick, on Scotty, you brought up the putting, and before we got to Shane Lowry, he just had a really interesting answer. Our very own Todd Lewis was doing the interview with him tonight for Live Room, and he was asked specifically about his putting. He didn't putt, Scotty, particularly well last week at the Scottish Open. So he said he kind of sat down with Phil Kenyon this week, and they just kind of worked on some alignment. But Scotty's answer said that the difference now versus maybe last year or 2 years ago, when everyone was sort of focused in on his putting, he said, last week didn't bother me. I knew that once I got my alignment right, everything would be fine. And now we see that. I think he's picking up more than five shots on the field on the greens.
Yeah, nearly six shots on the greens. He's become so much better inside 10 to 15 feet. Remember, that was the sort of the impetus for the change to go to the claw putting grip with the swing, his putting coach, Phil Kenyon, at the end of last year. Everyone was like, oh my God, you just won nine times in 2024. Why would you possibly change? It was to get better. He's got better from the critical range where he's obviously hitting it so often with his irons. The aforementioned Rory McIlroy, seven shots behind now of the weekend. It's not necessarily Rex, the players who are ahead of him, because he only has, 11 players, who are ahead of him. It's the player. Yeah. And just a couple of those players have won major championships. How difficult, how feasible do you think that this task is going to be for Rory McIlroy to make up this seven-shot deficit, to improve a position he finds at the halfway point, now in joint 12th?
If it was pretty much anyone else not named Scottie Scheffler at 10 under par and Rory was at 3 under par, I'd say that it was feasible given what Rory could possibly do over the course of the weekend. I wrote a column on NBCSports.com/golf, the idea being that Rory got past the hard part. He got past the first tee on Thursday that did have been last time it was played here in 2019. He was three strokes better. He was five strokes better today. He made a birdie there today. So he got past that hard part. He made the cut, got past that hard part. But now that's a mountain I don't think anybody can climb. That's no disrespect to Rory or anyone else. Scottie Scheffler, when he is on form like this, the only chance they have is if Scottie comes back. And give me an example of Scottie ever coming back.
Yeah, I think that's, I could think of one, the Tour Championship 2022. It was actually Rory McIlroy who upended him in the final round. The thing that makes Scottie so difficult, and obviously the iron play, obviously the improved putting, you have to point to that. But I think there's just sort of like this sense that everyone's just resigned to him not just making his way to the top of the leaderboard, but now staying there. And so it puts so much pressure on the pursuing pack, particularly on a Saturday. And I just looked at the forecast. There is at least, we always talk about like the low confidence in detail that the official forecast has. There actually is some pretty high confidence of what's going to happen on Saturday. It's going to be temperatures around 70 degrees. It's going to be cloudy, and the winds are not going to be that high, about 10 to 15 miles an hour, which, you know, when you're playing links golf, is not that detrimental, that prohibitive. So that's going to lead to, I think, even better scoring potentially than what we saw here in the second round. That has to make Rory McIlroy, I think, a little bit worried, because everyone's basically playing this golf course the exact same way. You know, you're making the birdies on the birdie holes. You know, you're holding on for dear life on holes like the 11th, which are the most difficult on the golf course. The par fives are reachable, so it's some drivable par fours as well. So everyone's sort of playing the same way. If you are a chaser, if you're a pursuer, you want the golf course to play as difficult as possible, because that's how you can separate yourself. But if everyone's shooting 64, 65, 66, 67, it's really hard to make up ground, particularly when the number one player in the world is at the top.
And to your point, yes, Scotty has come backwards in the past, but he doesn't do it very often. And you certainly haven't seen him do it very often in a major championship when he's playing like this. He's been playing well coming into this. It's not like he missed a cut last week at the Scottish Open. He finished top 10. He gave himself an opportunity to get into the hunt. But you're right. When he is playing the way he is right now, he just doesn't make mistakes. Even when he's gotten in trouble the last 2 days, our very own Johnson Wagner did a great job last night of sort of recreating that hack out back to the fairway last night. He had another one today where he just doesn't make bad mental mistakes. I mean, you can sit and look at his ball striking and his putting, and yes, it's phenomenal. But when he's not making mental mistakes, when he's not putting himself in a position to make a big number, if you're any of the players on that board trying to chase, you know he's not coming back to you.
And there's some interesting names that you see at the top of the leaderboard. Matt Fitzpatrick has been playing some really good golf, trending nicely over the past couple of months, made the switch from Mike Walker to Mark Blackburn at the RBC Heritage, I believe, the week after the Masters. He's been trending nicely, been better in each of his last four starts. Brian Harman, obviously, the 2023 Open champion. Terrell Hatton, he's been doing his thing on LIV Golf, nearly had a chance to win the U.S. Open just a couple of months ago. Which of those players, Rex, some of the contenders, do you think can give Scotty the best run for his money over the weekend?
When it comes to Matt, I did want to point out, I talked to Mark Blackburn yesterday or last night, kind of about how they ended up together. And this was kind of a mutual request by everybody involved, including the former swing coach. He asked Mark to sort of step in. So this was not a contentious situation at all. I think it's interesting when it comes to Fitzpatrick that we've talked so much in the past about his chase for speed. And you could argue that's how he ended up winning the U.S. Open at Brookline. He picked up so much distance, and it was all about that chase for speed. But Mark explained to me that chase created a swing that was kind of a path of in to out. So it created a bit of a draw, maybe even a bit of a hook. And Matt wants to see a fade. He wants to see the ball drop to the right. And so what they've done really since the Heritage is get his arms less involved, get his body more involved. And really, you've seen it click the last 2 weeks. He's finished inside the top 10 the last 2 weeks. He was tied for fourth last week at the Scottish Open and really controlled his golf ball. That fascinates me. But Brian Harman, I mean, he's won this before. He suddenly has learned how to play links golf as good as anyone else on the planet right now. And he has proven he has the tenacity to go head to head, even with the Scottie Scheffler.
And there's a couple of names. Brian Harman comes to mind. Harris English comes to mind. Last week's win of the Scottish Open, Chris Goddrup comes to mind. All of those players are vying for a U.S. Ryder Cup spot. And the team captain, of course, Keegan Bradley, actually shot 67 on Friday as well to sort of solidify his position. The first time really in his career that he has been in this position at the Open Championship, is very relieved to do so. So even if this thing gets out of hand for Scottie Scheffler, which I think you and I are both in agreement that it could potentially do that over the weekend here at Port Rush, there's still plenty to play for those players. So many points, point and a half for every $1,000 earned. As opposed to the typical 1,000 for PGA Tour Signature events. So there's certainly a lot to play for in that respect. When we sort of zoom out, Rex, for this mini pod, we're sitting here Friday night at Royal Port Rush. What's been sort of your biggest takeaway from what we've seen from the Open, big picture, over these first couple of days?
I mean, we talked about it early in the week, how much Royal Port Rush has really gone from zero to 160, really, in 6 years. I mean, we didn't know what to expect when the Open returned here for the first time in 68 years back in 2019. And you ended up with a really cool finish with what Shane Lowry was able to do. And it seemed like everybody who was on property was celebrating for one reason or the other. And this week, I think it's a carryover of the same. Certainly Rory McIlroy playing better, giving himself a little bit of a chance, ignites this crowd. But then you look at the leaderboard and it identifies the best players. I mean, you can't argue with Scottie Scheffler being in the lead. Anytime that happens, you just have to give the nod. It's proven to be the Open venue I think everyone thought it was going to be. And I don't want to say 2019 was a fluke, but if you can get the validation of a second time around, that's only going to help the golf course.
Yeah, Lynx golf is not for everybody, but it does seem like everyone's in agreement that Royal Port Rush is a phenomenal golf course. And bringing it back here, certainly for the second time in 6 years, has been a slam dunk. The story that I wrote for mcsports.com/golf, aka golfchannel.com, coming soon to a theater near you, is sort of how these players, is that you really have to adapt your game to this. I don't know if I've been in this mood because I saw the 2013 Open highlights won by Phil Mickelson, and he talked about how that was the greatest achievement of his career, a player who just basically played an aerial attack, sort of morphing his game with the help of short game guru Dave Pelz to hit like these full like chip shots. So coupled that performance with what we heard from Bryson DeChambeau earlier this week, where he's trying to learn this, and yet in actuality, he's doing the exact same thing he's always doing. When you look at this leaderboard, Rex, and what stands out to me through 36 holes is Scottie Scheffler. He may not have won an Open title, but he does everything that you would expect a potential Open champion to do. The creativity, the imagination, the ball control, the judging the run out and the bounces, great lag putter, great hands, knows to be patient. Like he defines all the attributes of what you'd expect from an Open champion. Matt Fitzpatrick, his game very similar in that regard. Brian Harman, a preeminent shot shaper in an era where bomb and gouge has really been emphasized on the PGA Tour. Tyrrell Hatton grew up playing links. Bob McIntyre grew up playing links. Like, all of these players have those sort of skills. We don't see it that much, particularly in the major championships, which has been all about, let's tee this as high as we can, hammer it wherever it goes. We'll try and hoist an iron as high as we can get it from there. It's such a refreshing change of pace to see, like, quality of strike, imagination, and creativity in sort of this TrackMan era where everything's trying to be optimized. That was sort of my big takeaway to 36 holes.
Well, and Rory has talked about this really the last few weeks. It brings out the artist more so than the scientist, and that's no disrespect to Bryson DeChambeau, who had a pretty impressive comeback today just to make the cut. Like, he had to work pretty hard just to make the cut. It is worth pointing out that Bryson played well, however, in relatively calm conditions compared to yesterday. He is still having issues with the wind, and that has everything to do with he's more scientist than artist. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, when you can come here and you can see, I think Brian, I'm doing a hit on live from tonight on Brian Harman. And I spoke with
you're gonna trot out some material here for us. Try it out.
You guys tell me if you like it or not. There's a reason why one of us is dressed up like the Open is an occasion, and one of us is dressed up like he's going to a ball game right now. Because one of us has to do live from tonight. However, I will say, I talked to Justin Parson, Brian Harman's swing coach, and he said it goes back to when he won the Open in 2023, that he has sort of that imagination, and he loves the idea that he can look at any shot and realize I can play this five or six different ways. Justin Parson's talked me through the idea that he has three different shots for every club, from a nine iron to a sand wedge, and allows him to flight the ball differently and spin the ball differently. And that really started before the 2023 Open Championship. And that's why he continues to be a good links player today.
And that's the criticism of the modern game, isn't it? That everything's just monotonous. Yeah. That everyone just reaches for driver. Everyone just hammers wedge. There's really no shot shaping. So this has been such a welcome relief. I'm looking forward to seeing how the final 36 holes pans out. That's going to do it for this edition, Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lev. You guys are the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for all latest news, notes, and updates. Make sure you go to the website for my columns and Rex's as well. We'll be back on Saturday.
If you like the 2-1 shot or you want it back in the box.
Yes, put us... We're gonna be back in the box. Please don't put Daddy back in the box. That's it for this episode. We'll see you on Saturday night. Enjoy the third round of the Open Championship.